It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 576 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great conversation with Cam Curcu from Gilgamesh Eternals number 1 and 2 on Zoot.gg. Cam is an editor and writer whose love of comic script writing began at an early age and has developed into a career as a managing editor at Sourcepoint Press, where he has worked with Cullen Bunn and other excellent creators. Gilgamesh is now available at Zoop.gg and is described this way. The Epic of Gilgamesh is the world's oldest story, dating back almost 5 millennia. But Gilgamesh's dilemma is something that remains relevant to us today and always will. How can you live peacefully after you've been truly confronted by your own mortality? We discuss how these two volumes came to be, who the characters are, how Cam found the artist he's working with, and what he's up to that we will discover soon. The world's first story continues in the world's greatest storytelling medium. Become a part of the epic now by supporting Gilgamesh Eternal number 1 and 2 on Zoop. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Cam has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. The world's first story continues in the world's greatest storytelling medium. Become part of the epic now by supporting Gilgamesh Eternal number 1-2 on Zoop.gg. And I have the pleasure of talking with Cam Curcu, who is the writer of Gilgamesh Eternal. How are you doing, Cam?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm really glad to be talking to you today.
It's good to talk with you too. So now let me do a little more on the background, because I think people will appreciate knowing a little bit more about the story. It's interesting. It's supposedly the very first story that was ever written, but a lot of people don't know about it. So I always get a kick out of things like that. Well, why don't I ask you? You're probably the better person to ask. What should people know about the Gilgamesh story before they read your comic?
The Epic of Gilgamesh is the world's oldest story, dating back almost 5 millennia, but Gilgamesh's dilemma is something that remains relevant to us all today and always will. How can you live peacefully after you've been truly confronted by your own mortality? So our comic, Gilgamesh Eternal, is based on the Epic of Gilgamesh. In the first issue, we see Gilgamesh and his partner Enkidu travel the world slaying monsters in search of glory, but unfortunately they make too many enemies along the way and the Bull of Heaven is sent to destroy their home in retaliation. So in the second issue we see Gilgamesh kind of overcome with grief and thrust into the wilderness as he grapples with the aftermath of that battle.
Okay, very good. Now, Gilgamesh is referred to as a god king. As I read someplace, he's two-thirds god and one-third human. Is that accurate?
Yep. That's how he's described in the myth. His father was the king of Uruk before him, and his mother was the goddess Ninsun.
And he built magnificent temple towers that surrounded his city with high walls and laid out its orchards and fields. He was supposedly physically beautiful, immensely strong, and very wise, but he started out his kingship as a cruel despot. Is what I read. He lorded over his subjects, having his way with any woman that struck his fancy, no matter who she was. So things kind of cleared up after that, though. Enkidu was supposedly sent to, as you were saying, to set him straight. And that relationship kind of helped him get his act together, apparently. That's what it says. So, is that accurate, you think?
Yeah. So Gilgamesh was known as a cruel king originally, and the people of Uruk prayed to the gods to kind of mellow him out. And they answered by creating this man in the wilderness called Enkidu, who was made to be his equal and exact opposite. And so Enkidu travel to Uruk to battle Gilgamesh and get him to knock off all the evil king stuff. And they fought. They found themselves to be an even match. And in the end of it, they became very close. In my story, I've interpreted the myth so that they are romantic partners as well as friends. The myth references that Gilgamesh will love Enkidu as he does a wife, and this is commonly interpreted to be a platonic relationship, but in my interpretation, that they are in a romantic relationship.
I find that really interesting. It may be that just the way that society has looked upon those kinds of relationships has changed recently, and in the past, they didn't want to acknowledge that even that could take place, particularly on godlike characters, it seems to me. So I'm just curious, though, what was it that made you decide to go that route with that relationship?
Well, to me, I mean, I think the messaging of you will love him as you love a wife, personally, I felt like I couldn't interpret that any other way. And I feel like, you know, for the past 200 years or however long we've been studying Gilgamesh, it's been interpreted as a platonic love. So I thought, why not look at it a little differently?
Okay, so that's going to be something that'll make your book stand out compared to other story versions of this. So that's kind of fun. Well, I do want to step back a little bit, though, and find out what it was, how you discovered Gilgamesh and how you decided you wanted to interpret this, particularly as a comic book. How did you discover the Gilgamesh story?
Yeah, so I felt like everyone has kind of known Gilgamesh's name. I always felt like I knew Gilgamesh's name, but I didn't know his story. I didn't read the epic in high school, and I wanted to know why his name was so prevalent, even though, you know, I didn't know what his whole deal was. So that's what led me to read the myth, and when I read it, I was struck by how relevant his struggle felt. The themes of the epic are kind of timeless. The way that it centers Gilgamesh's struggle with his grief and his own mortality, something that I found really compelling. And it's that aspect of the myth that we're examining in the comic book, along with some really outrageous, beautifully rendered fight scenes by Costas.
Well, I want to get to that. His artwork just is... It's kind of tough, I guess, to talk to the writer about the artist, you know, on some levels. You know, you're the writer. You want to focus on the writing. But a lot of people are interested in the artwork, and we'll get to that. I want to talk about that. But the thing I'm really interested in, though, this story reminded me of the first time I realized that I was mortal. I was in a car with my parents, and my parents were discussing the fact that somebody was going to be dying soon. And when I put two and two together and realized that I was in that same category, I chided them. Don't say that, because I'm going to die someday too. I don't want to talk about that. And they looked at each other kind of funny. And I remember that being, I was about 7 years old, I think it was. And so this story and reading about this reminded me of that. Did you have an experience like that, or have you always kind of been aware of your mortality? How did that happen in your personal life?
That's an interesting question. No single thing really made me aware of my mortality. I was always kind of aware of it, and that's kind of why I found Gilgamesh's story so compelling, because it's not one instance where I discovered I was mortal. It was a forever feeling of, why is everybody okay with this whole mortality thing? Like, why don't we talk about this more? I think that, death is just a scary, scary thing. The idea that, you know, where your consciousness was, there will one day be a void. That's something that's always kind of just made my hair stand on end. So the fact that, you know, Gilgamesh is one of the oldest stories that we have and deals with this very thing, it's really made me feel human, ironically.
It's interesting, because I still don't deal with death very well. when I'll be at church and they start talking about death and the afterlife and stuff, and I'll get really nervous. and I don't like that. And then when I lose like a pet or something like that, I sob for days as a result of it. So So for me, this is going to be a real interesting story to read because like I said, this is not my favorite subject. So you're lucky in a way that you have been dealing with this most of your life. For me, on one hand, I did not believe in Santa Claus because my mother went to the store and bought all the stuff that ended up under the tree on Christmas. So I always thought my mother was Santa Claus, but I never believed in that. But this is the one thing that really shook me when I was a kid. So I'm going to be really fascinated to see how this turns out because it just sounds like a fascinating subject to deal with. Which leads me to a question, though. You're translating a story that is so old. We talked about the fact that you've kind of put a different interpretation on the relationship between Gilgamesh and the other guy. How did you interpret Gilgamesh? Was there something – how did you look at him? Did you try to be really faithful to the original? Did you find things that you thought should be done differently to be accurate and be relevant to today? How did you do that?
Well, we did take a lot of – not a lot, but some storytelling liberties in order to fully examine each character's motivation. I think that I ended up being pretty faithful with Gilgamesh's depiction. I did try to insert some humor into his portrayal, especially in the first issue when he's meant to be, you know, the happiest he's ever going to be. But for most of the epic, you know, Gilgamesh is succumbed with grief and he's prone to tantrums, or at least I see them as tantrums. He's, you know, he never thought that he was ever going to have to deal with death on a personal level. And when he finds out that he does, he doesn't take it well. He kind of lets himself be consumed by it in ways that are almost childish in the way that I interpreted them. The way that I see it, you know, he's born with this incredible heritage of being part god and king and all powerful. You know, until he deals with this tragedy at the end of the first issue, I don't think anything had ever not gone his way. So I think that he never really had to grow very much until well into his adult life. So he's something of a child in his temperament.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So that's going to be really interesting. I'm also curious as to, you know, I think there have been multiple interpretations over time of the story. Did you go back to the earliest one you could find? Was there a version that you particularly liked or thought was most helpful for you to turn into a comic book? How did that get set up? How did you do that?
Well, there have been several translations of the epic, and I've read a few of them. I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head which ones were my favorite, but I know... I went back to the N.K. Sanders translation a lot. There's another one by Morris Jastrow and Albert T. Clay. I also did a lot of reading on just Mesopotamia in general, including a book called Mesopotamian Mythology by Scott Lewis, and some reinterpretations as well. There was one, Gilgamesh Retold by Jenny Lewis, that was really interesting. But mostly I just focused on reading and rereading the original myth and several translations of the original myth.
I see, that leads to my next question. Why is it called Gilgamesh Eternal? Is it because of the relevance? Or is it because of, do you think that in far as fiction goes, he's still alive? Because, you know, like for example, DC Comics has Vandal Savage, who was a meteor crashed near him and that made him immortal. Why is it called Gilgamesh Eternal?
Yeah, that's a reference to several things, I think. First of all, it's a reference to his search for eternal life. It's, you know, a reference to this idea of forever, or whatever the opposite of forever would be, and how scary nothingness can be. It's also kind of plays into a little bit of how I'm going to augment the myth in the starting in the second issue and the third issue. Things are going to kind of I'm going to be elaborating on the myth in creative ways. This is, you know, a creative interpretation more than it is an academic one. So I am taking some liberties with the plot lines that are going to tie back into that title as well.
Okay, very cool. It's gonna be good, cause I just thought, you know, because there was a movie called Batman Eternal, I think. And I thought if the movie was a flop or was too long, that would have been a big mistake. Call it Eternal. You know, so I was just, I was just kind of, you know, before we get off the subject, though, do you know how many issues you want to write of Gilgamesh Eternal?
3 issues. That was one of the challenging things about adapting the myth. It's it is a short myth, but there are so many interesting threads that we could have pulled on and expanded upon. We really had to focus our efforts and decide early on that we were going to do the 3 best issues that we could and just focus on telling the story, you know, as succinctly and as satisfactorily as we could in just 3 issues.
Okay, I heard somewhere that teachers are actually getting in touch with you to get copies of, so they can give it to the students so they can get more familiar with Gilgamesh. Has that happened a lot for you, or how's that happened?
Yeah, that's been pretty interesting. After after the first issue came out, I did have a lot of teachers reach out to me several teachers reached out to me on Twitter and Facebook to see if they could get a copy of the book because they were teaching ancient history through comics. And so that's been really, really cool. I had a couple of high school and middle school teachers reach out to me, and they ended up not being able to use it because of, you know, the content in the book. It's a little bit above that age range, but the college professors seem to get a lot of interest and use out of it.
Because it reminds me of the Mouse book, MAUS. There were people trying to teach about World War II and the Holocaust, and they discovered that comic, which was written by the son of a guy who had gone there, but he translated them into animals.
Yeah, I love Mouse.
Oh my gosh, and all these people were going, this is like the most fantastic book that's ever been written. And I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I go that far, but a lot of the times, you know, especially if you've got anything to do with comics, people come to you and say, what comic should I use? Or what should I suggest to people? And this is going to be one of those books I think I'm going to suggest along with Mouse, because I it's going to say something and it's going to help fill in some of the history. So I really think that you're doing a great job. And I think this is something that's going to be important for those of us who like comics and hope that the tradition will continue, that people actually read comics and give something good to give them a start.
Well, that is a huge compliment. Being included on any list alongside Mouse is just a joy.
Just great stuff. It's going to be one of those books, I think, that libraries are going to have and schools are going to use, I think. And believe me, we need a lot more of that, in my humble opinion. So I think that's really terrific stuff. Now, we did talk earlier a little bit. We touched on your artist. And I sometimes I know in comics, you know, the old adage is art, like a cover, will attract people in, but it's the story that keeps them coming back. And I have a feeling that's going to be a lot of people are going to say that about your Gilgamesh Eternal books. Because I heard the story about how you I found your the artist, and the last name I think is Pantoulis. Is that right?
Yeah, Costas Pantoulis.
Yeah, he does. You know, when you're dealing with gods and you're dealing with supernatural kind of things and stuff, it's sort of tough, I think, to make it really not only believable but artistically interesting and visually interesting. But wow, I do have to say, yeah, you were the guy that found this person. So congrats to you on finding this great artist and the things he did. I understood you were going, you found him through a place where people posted their portfolios. Is that right?
Yeah, I used to frequent this website called Zwall.org. I'm not sure how I ever found it. It's been up for at least a decade now, and it's just full of people who are posting their portfolios looking for collaborations. But I think it might be frequented a little bit less lately. But yeah, I stumbled upon Costas's work while I was looking for an artist for you know, this adaptation of Gilgamesh. I knew that I wanted it to look different, but I wasn't really sure exactly what that meant until I saw Costas's portfolio and his chaotic sci-fi pieces, and I knew that I wanted Gilgamesh to look like nothing else.
Well, boy, congrats on that. You have accomplished that, I have to say, because, wow, when I look at the artwork. Now, is he doing this with pencil? How is he creating the artwork?
He is working completely traditionally. He starts with pencil, and then he inks with pen and does a watercolor kind of paint on top of it. And it's really, really wonderful to watch him work. And his original art pages are actually going to be available for purchase on the campaign.
Yeah, that's going to be something, boy. I would treasure that because, wow. When I sat and looked at the artwork, I was astonished, to be honest with you, because, you know, I've seen things, you know, usually they do gods as very average-looking people. You know, they're just guys with robes and stuff like that. And I'm always going like, if I buy that. But when I saw his art, I was transfixed. It's the only word I can think of. Just amazing how he does. Each god has a very different look to them. And God, when they move and stuff like that, it is astounding the way that he does it. So, man, I'm just overwhelmed by how great the artwork is. And you can take some credit as the writer. And I know that some writers, that's the artist, that's somebody else. But I think that you made a superb choice in this book.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the fun thing about translating something that is, you know, usually just a text. It's just a poem. It's interesting to be able to bring a visual language to that because there really aren't any rules to follow. You know, you just kind of go with your creative instinct. And, you know, all of our locations and our creatures and the gods, they all, they take inspiration from Mesopotamian art and artifacts, of course, but Costas also injected this really strange kind of, it's kind of organic, but it's kind of metallic at the same time. And it's this weird science fiction twist on mythology. It kind of blurs the line between religious myth and science fiction.
It's amazing. I mean, you're right. It's not like anything I've ever seen before. It's just, it's amazing. It's great. Well, we're talking about that too. We should talk about your letterer.
Mirror Mortal,
which always makes me laugh. I always think that that's like mere mortal, you know, phrase that people use. And so I have to laugh at that. Why don't you talk about her and you know, how you came across her?
Yeah, Mira was actually recommended to me by Josh Werner, the editor-in-chief of Source Point Press, because they had worked together in the past, and he was really impressed with her work. And I'm so glad that he did, because I can't imagine, you know, the lettering in this book looking any different. She made it wholly unique, the way that she gives every single character their own kind of visual style to their phrasing. It's beautiful.
Again, it's something that really helps this book stand out. And just amazing. Now, you've touched on something we need to talk about. The fact that you used to be an editor for Source Point Press. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? How did you get to be an editor there? And why did you decide to actually stop? Or I don't know if you're still editor or not, but how did you decide to go into actually creating comics?
Yeah, well, I mean, my goal has always been to write comics. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to do ever since I was 4 years old, ever since I first saw a comic book. I knew that what I wanted to do was make these things. And so I've kind of set my whole life trajectory to meet that goal. in high school at my local comic shop, Cashman's Comics, I found a book from the Michigan Comics Collective, they were called, which was this nonprofit group of Michigan creators just putting together anthologies. And I believe they were donating the proceeds to charity. And in the back, they had an ad for their submissions for their next anthology, which was a horror anthology. And so, you know, I was like, oh, that's my chance to finally get something in print. So I submitted a short to them a couple of months later, and it was accepted. And in the process between the submission window and the actual printing of that horror anthology, the Michigan Comics Collective got sort of absorbed by this publisher out of Detroit, Michigan, Source Point Press. And so that's when I first learned about Source Point Press. By then, I was working at my college newspaper and writing articles about comic books, and I would find every opportunity I could to talk about these Source Point Press guys because I thought that they were doing really cool things, you know, in the Michigan comic scene. So that way I kind of got to know the CEO, Travis McIntyre, and as I said, the editor-in-chief, Josh. So by the time I was out of college, I was more than prepared to run in there and ask for an internship. That internship turned into a full-time job, and that's where I had been for the past 2 years.
Wow. They made you an editor based on your internship?
Yeah. After about a six-month internship, they started me off, you know, pretty light with just one or two titles. Corollary was one, and Noah, Not Otherwise Authorized, was another. Yeah, over the past few years, just more duties and titles had kind of been assigned to me, and yeah.
So are you still doing that?
I am still editing a couple of books with Source Point Press. One of them is Nightwalkers from Cullen Bunn, Joe Picardo, and Colin Johnson. That is a vampire horror series that is out right now. I think the third issue is in Previews World. And I'd really appreciate anyone who wants to go check that out. Go to your local comic shop and grab up the first two issues. I'm also working on a second book with Colin and his writing partner, Heath Amodio, which is kind of a superhero thriller, which there isn't a lot of information out yet about that one, but there will be soon, very soon.
Okay, that leads to the next question, of course. If people want to follow you or keep up with your comic stuff, how do they do that? Do you have social media?
Yes, I do. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Cam Kerkau, CamKerkau. I'm also on Facebook. You can go ahead and try to add me a friend if you'd like. And Costas is also on Instagram at k.pantoulis.art. Mira Mortal is on Twitter as well. Her Twitter handle, I always get it wrong, Mortal Coil.
Okay, sounds good. Now, let's talk about some of the things that you can get as part of your Zoop.gg project. Now, we should say that it looks like this is going to end in early March. And if you go to zoop.gg/Gilgamesh Eternal, you'll find the project there. And right now it's on the zoop.gg front page too. So that's a good thing. But I was interested in some of the interesting covers. Like, for example, of course, Costas does the main one, but then Kit Wallace does the B cover. And he's an interesting choice. He did Good Boy at Source Point Press, which is, if you know anything about that book, that's about it's kind of a flip on, I can never remember the name of the
John Wick.
That's the one, John Wick and his dog. And what happens is the dog is the main character in that book. So I'm fascinated that Kit Wallace is I guess maybe, did you work at all on Good Boy or did you get to know Kit Wallace? Is that why he's involved in this?
Yeah, I didn't get to work on Good Boy much, but I do know the writer Garrett Gunn very, very well, and he kind of put me in touch with Kit on some other projects with Source Point Press. So kind of got to know Kit a little bit that way. And yeah, so I reached out to Kit because I knew I wanted I want variety in my variant covers, right? I don't want a bunch of the same art style. I want to keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. And I knew that Kit would bring something different, you know? And I think that he did. He brings kind of this crazy ferocity to Gilgamesh that we don't very often see of him in our book.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can't pronounce the name of the other person that covers C. Is Dennis Menhir? Is that how you pronounce it?
I believe that's how you pronounce it, yeah. But I could be wrong. I should probably ask.
We need pronunciation guides.
I've been saying Dennis Menhir. Okay. Dennis, I think, is a newer professional artist. I think he recently announced on his Twitter that he was going to focus full time on art, and he kind of came out of nowhere and blew everybody away. Because every time I see a piece that he posts, my jaw drops. Like the talent that this guy has, it's crazy to me that he waited this long to show off what he's got. He's doing a book with Source Point right now called Theories with Anas Abdulak, and it's just an absolutely gorgeous book. I did get to read it a little bit earlier than everybody else, and immediately knew Dennis in some capacity. So when the opportunity came up for another Gilgamesh cover, he was the first person I asked, and he delivered this beautiful variant cover C, which features Shamhat and the goddesses Ninsun and Inanna. Shamhat is Inanna's high priestess, and Inanna is kind of the antagonist of the story, but Shamhat is also Gilgamesh's closest friend, and she's actually the one that brought Enkidu from the wilderness into Uruk. So she has kind of an interesting role to play, especially in the second issue, where she's kind of caught between Gilgamesh and Inanna. She's stuck between these two opposing characters' ambitions, and she's kind of put into this role where she's leading the people of Uruk in Gilgamesh's absence in the second issue, and so she kind of has to find a way to navigate Inanna and Gilgamesh's ambitions while keeping the well-being of her people as her highest priority.
Okay, now you do remind me of something. We're talking about issue number 2 of Gilgamesh Eternal, and if you didn't get issue number 1, which I understand you did on Kickstarter, you actually found someplace 20 copies of the original one. So, but you're having more than that available, right? Is that what's going on with issue number 1?
So, this is a campaign to raise funds for the second issue of Gilgamesh. With the first issue had been funded last year. We're offering the first issue in this campaign, and we're actually going to be touching up the Costas is going to be retouching the color of the first issue for the second printing, and so we're offering that kind of updated first issue alongside these 20 copies of the first issue that I found hiding in my desk at work. Actually, I was cleaning out my desk recently, and I found 20 whole copies that I didn't realize I still had. So we're offering those as well. If you kind of are a completionist and you want the full set and you want to see it in its original form without the retouching that we're to be doing on the color, we are offering 20 copies of those.
Very cool, very cool. Now, there's one other thing, and there's original art pages and stuff like that, which are just gorgeous. But there's one thing that particularly intrigues me. There is a $50 level. You get 2 rounds of edits on your standard length comic script by you. And I'm kind of curious. You've made 3 of them available, but when we're talking, you still haven't gotten anybody claiming that one yet. And as an editor myself, I have to tell you, this is one of those things that people should take advantage of. There's a difference between Let's Eat, Grandpa and Let's Eat Grandpa. And not everybody gets that. somebody like you, I look forward to seeing better scripts coming out. Hopefully at least three people will get their commas right and get their things and spell refrigerator right. I always tell the story about how I'm watching TV with my friends and a commercial comes on and I go, "Oh my gosh, they spelled refrigerator wrong." And my friends all look at me like, "What?" So those of us who are editors have to stick together and try to make things better. And the one thing I always feel it's important is that if you provide too many roadblocks for people who are reading a comic, they'll eventually give up and say, "Well, I'm not going to keep going on that. I can't figure it out." So I'm sure you're carrying on and making sure that the scripts that you get actually make some sense and are easy to read. So that'll be great.
Yeah, that's right. I'm really looking forward to meeting up with some new writers and giving them whatever insight I can to help them reach their vision with their script.
Because, you know, one of the things I struggle as an editor, and this is probably a little inside baseball here, but I struggle not to make people sound like me. You know, it's people are always trying to say, "Well, you should change this and change that." And then when you get done, it sounds like you wrote it. And so I'm always trying to maintain the original feeling of the writer and trying to make sure that I don't impose my own style on top of it. It makes me think of like John Byrne. Whenever John Byrne would ink somebody, they would look like John Byrne had drawn it. And so I'm always telling editors, don't do that to people. Let the writers as well have their own personalities. And I'm sure that's something that you look forward to just as well.
Yeah, that's right. I always start out every editing process with a conversation with the creators. I want to fully understand what their intentions are with a script before I start kind of imposing my own tastes upon it.
Yeah, there's a difference between good grammar and your grammar.
Yeah, that's right.
I tell people because people do that to me. I've had people try to edit me, and I go, "No, that's not what I would say." So you have to be really careful about that. So once again, it's Gilgamesh Eternal, numbers 1 and 2. It's on Zoop. Again, it's at zoop.gg/seasoncat/Gilgamesh Eternal. And it's going to end in early March. Don't wait until that time to sign up for it. There's lots of good levels out there. There's digital copies you can get. There's a digital comics bundle, which has a bunch of people that I think you know, Cam, who are in there. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. I count at least 9 out there. Some of them I recognize, some of them I don't, which is always good. But I think that's a great level, too. It's something to help people discover more comics and do those kinds of things. Did you, by any chance, edit any of those books, or are they just kind of friends of yours?
Yeah, no, that is something where I just kind of put out a public call when I was first attending the campaign, just seeing if anybody would be willing to share their book with the campaign. And the response that I got was huge, and that was really exciting to me. It was a really cool moment of indie comics community. You know, it's you can tell that comic creators, they want to help each other out. They want to get books read, and they want to get books made. And so, yeah, I appreciate everybody who let me include their book in our digital bundle. And there's some really fantastic stuff in there. It's worth the price of admission alone, if you ask me.
Well, some of them I recognize. Small Bites is one that I actually supported. And Super Best Friend, I know. And Cthulhu Invades Wonderland, I think, is a really good one. Dead Dreams was one that really intrigued me as well. Now, the one I'm really interested in reading is The Sentinel. I haven't read that one yet, so I'm really fascinated by that one. So that should be good. And I have backed your thing for that. That's the bundle I'm going to go for, is that your book, as long as with the digital ones. One of the problems I always tell people I have is I have gotten so many print comics, and I haven't gotten to read them all yet, that the stack that I need to read is as tall as I am. So I have to, I'm getting back to the, I'm doing more digital books these days, but looks good, though. Anyway, and again, it's Gilgamesh Eternal numbers 1 and 2. Cam, it's been great talking with you, and I'm sure this is going to be a big success. And I'm looking to see number 3. Do you have other projects that are that you're working on that we should know about, or this is keeping you busy?
This is keeping me busy for now. I'm hoping to have more to talk about throughout the year. The plan is to launch 1 or 2, at least 1, hopefully 2 more series by the end of 2023. I'm working on 2 different science fiction books right now, and it's early, but I'm hoping to talk more about them soon.
Okay, and of course we follow you online, so if we can keep up with that, so that'll be good. So Cam, it's a pleasure talking with you, and I can't wait to see people get these books in their hands and be able to read them and enjoy and actually maybe learn a little bit about storytelling. That would be great. So just keep up the wonderful stuff, Cam, and I'm looking forward to more of your work in the future.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.